Chapter 5. The next morning, I wake up with Perry wedged between me and the back of the sofa. Half my butt hangs off the edge. I shift onto my side to snuggle her. She sleeps with her mouth open. Her breath smells like sweet corn. Just as I start to doze off again, a finger pokes my shoulder. I wince. "You know that's my sore one," I grumble, rolling over.
"Will you make pancakes?"
Pauline whispers loudly. Her breath smells like corn chips.
"I want pancakes,"
Perry says, eyes closed, still on the bridge between asleep and awake. Sometimes you know you're up against forces too powerful to ignore. I reach around Pauline's sturdy body and roll her over to smush Perry in a hug. "Ninde gyaden, you have my heart." I kiss each girl. I sit up and spot Auntie's car in the driveway, letting out a sigh of relief. Auntie's dismissal last night rushes back to me, but I push away the hurt, telling myself that at least she's home safe. By the time I finish getting ready in the bathroom, Perry and Pauline are waiting for me at the kitchen island. They love my pancakes. I place the electric griddle in front of them and plug it in to heat up while I brew a pot of coffee.
"Tell me where you went last night,"
I say once the drip drip of the coffee maker begins. They also love telling me their dreams. I listen while adding the pancake ingredients in the blender. Perry found herself inside a bank vault filled with fancy jewelry. She brags, "I was the bad guy, Auntie Donis. I was really good at it." "Pearl, Mary, Firekeeper, Birch, Jewel Thief," I laugh. "And what about you, sis?" Pauline says a mysterious boy visited her dreams and told her she was a princess. "You know, Pauline, you can be a princess even without a boy saying so," I say while sipping a cup of coffee with hot cocoa mix added. Pauline rolls her eyes. "Aho!" Perry chirps, the Ojibwe equivalent of amen. I spit out my coffee at her response. Today, the girls want bear cub pancakes. As I pour batter onto the hot griddle, Auntie's words come back like a boomerang. "Live your nice life." Distracted, I mess up the bear cub ears. I curse under my breath and fix them by glopping on more batter and declaring them alien pancakes. Pauline pouts, but Perry happily crams hers in her mouth. When Auntie and Art come downstairs, the twins are stuffed full of pancakes and maple syrup made at last year's Sugar Bush, watching SpongeBob SquarePants on TV. "Miigwech, little sister," Art says warmly. He always thanks me for giving them their private morning time. I glance at Auntie, who avoids eye contact. I'm not sure what time she came home, but I can tell something happened last night. Bigger than the blanket party. I don't know if I should say something first or wait for her to mention it. Either way, I doubt she'll say much in front of the twins. Sure enough, Auntie just makes small talk until it's time for me to leave. The twins sit on each foot like usual, begging me to stay as I drag them toward the door. Once I shake them off, Art gives me another hug. Ordinarily, Auntie would nod and tell me to stay out of trouble, own my power, or aim true when kicking Harry Pajog. Standard Nishkwe anthems. Today, she makes a point of embracing me. She holds on long after I let go. "Nide kiaden," she says in my ear. I feel like crying, but I'm not sure why. Auntie is full of remorse today. I just wish she didn't have the need for her regrets. Or maybe the blanket party didn't solve a problem, but created a new mess instead. The blanket party stays on my mind all day. Lily meets me at the big house in the afternoon to move artwork and other valuables to my grandfather's library as a safety precaution. I want to enjoy the party instead of worrying about something getting damaged. As we work, I tell Lily about the blanket party.
"I wonder who they got," she muses. "Can you imagine a council member or the mayor or, like, a teacher walking around with a black eye, pretending they walked into a door or some such foolishness?"
"I just hope whoever the blanket party posse was helping, that she feels safer now," I say. Levi shows up at my grandparents' house with the beer around 8 p.m. Ice cold, as promised. I can tell Lily's pissed. We set up the keg in the kitchen. Then Levi leaves to pick up his friends, calling over his shoulder, "Don't drink all the booze before I get back." "I don't know why you're mad," I say as we head to the library off the dining room, where the liquor cabinet is located. Levi just did us a big favor. She gives a frustrated growl.
You're so clueless sometimes.
Hey, I'm not legal in Canada till October, and Auntie told me never to ask her to buy alcohol. So, unless Granny June was going to buy us this pony keg, we were shit out of luck. I lower my voice, teasing.
Come on, Lily. Do you know how humiliating it was to ask my younger by 3 months brother to get us beer?
It's just... Lily holds back, as if choosing her words carefully.
You bitch about Hockey World, and then you invite the king of Hockey World to our party. What happened to just having a few friends over?
Calm your tits, Lil. We're celebrating. Lake State. Woohoo! I say with minimal enthusiasm. It's just Levi and his minions crashing the party. And Jamie Johnson. What can I do to make it up to you?
You invited Jamie?
She eyeballs me. Oh, I get it now.
Calm your own tits and stick your tongue down new guy's throat, hey?
No tits to calm, sis, I say, looking down at my flat chest. And I'm not kissing Jamie. Levi's the one who wanted him here, and he's got a girlfriend. Anticipating a comment from Lily about my defensive tone, I decide it's grappa time. I walk over to the liquor cabinet. My grandparents' foolproof security system was to hide the key on the hook on the back of the fancy cabinet. The alcohol equivalent of writing your password on a post-it and sticking it on your computer screen. I select a bottle of imported grappa. I take a big sip and the Italian brandy burns all the way down to my gut.
If the girlfriend's dating a hockey god who's playing for a team thousands of miles away, where the hell is he from anyway?
Whatever. She knew the sitch, Lily says. Is that what you would have said to my mom? I take another swig of grappa.
You know, she's never gotten over walking in on my dad and Levi's ma. I know, I know. I only said to kiss him because you haven't dated anyone since TJ, and that was 2 years ago. Stupid hookups don't count.
She lets out a sigh that feels too big for her body.
I'm pissed because your brother takes over shit and makes it about him. This was supposed to be for us.
She's right. I take another drink. It's only the first swig that burns. This one spreads a relaxing warmth throughout my body.
We're gonna have a great night. It's still about us. 3 weeks from now, we start college.
You gotta tell Granny June how much your books are gonna cost so you can redeem one of her coupons. Lily's graduation present from her great-grandmother was a sheet of 8 handwritten coupons. This coupon is good for 1 semester of books and supplies for Lily June Chippeway with love from Granny June, non-transferable.
You're right, and once we're at Lake State, no more Levi and his boys.
Lily scopes the liquor cabinet and pulls out a bottle of Frangelico. She clinks the odd bottle, shaped like a priest, against my bottle of clear liquor, which has a grapevine twig floating inside. Before we drink, Lily holds out her left hand to begin our special handshake. Lake State, baby, I say at our butterfly flutter finale. Lily trills a lily that nearly shatters my eardrum. 2 hours later, my little goon is loudly scolding Levi for playing music too loudly.
Do you want the cops to stop by?
Lily sounds exactly like Granny June giving someone hell. Levi ignores her until Lily adds,
all them tribal cops are cross-deputized to handle calls off the res, so maybe TJ will be the one who responds to the loud noise complaint.
My brother immediately turns down the volume on Hoobastank.
And I told you to play Amy Winehouse, she reminds him.
And I told you, Levi counters,
none of your weird music that nobody else knows.
As Lily launches into a profanity-laced speech about the genius of Amy Winehouse, I count 24 people in the big house. I take a swig of grappa for every half dozen people. The pony keg won't last much longer. Levi and his friends will leave. Lily will calm her tits. Everything will be fine. I already feel fine. So fine, in fact, that when Jamie Johnson stands next to me, I hold out the bottle of grappa so he can feel fine, too. He takes a small sip and coughs.
What is this? Moonshine? He sputters.
Grappa, Italian brandy, I say, made from the stuff left behind after the grapes are pressed for wine. I take another swig and offer to give Jamie a tour of the big house.
Donis, the friendly host. That's all. I'm
definitely not trying to be alone with him. Some creeper girl Levi must have invited tags along when we go upstairs.
Damn wannabe anglerfish auditioning for the part of Jamie Johnson's next girlfriend.
Anglerfish. That's what I call the hockey girlfriends. A bottom-dweller fish that bites its mate and fuses with it. A parasitic appendage, unable to exist separately. There's a master bedroom suite, 3 more bedrooms, 2 other bathrooms, and a secret door to the scary attic. I fling my arm awkwardly toward all the doors. Jamie smiles at my wild gesturing.
Wait, so you grew up here? The girl asks.
Till I was 6. Then my mom finished college, started teaching kindergarten, and bought a house 4 blocks away.
I narrow my eyes at the anglerfish circling Jamie like a shark. But yeah, Sunday dinners and major holidays here.
I lead them down a paneled hallway, pointing to the hidden attic door and pressing a finger to my lips to emphasize its secret existence.
Jamie pauses to stare at my senior portrait on the wall. Grand Mary made me curl my hair. I have a dreamy expression on my face. My mother's and uncle's portraits are next to mine. They barely look like who they became. Mom graduated high school a year after her classmates, the only one with a toddler. Her dark brown hair was shellacked into a tall wave of bangs and angel wings curving around each ear before cascading past her shoulders. There is something heartbreaking about her stylish efforts and the way she smiles into the camera, her beautiful green eyes filled with hope. I want to hug that version of my mother. She has no idea of the losses to come. In his portrait, Uncle David looks as if seeing the Sioux in the rearview mirror cannot happen quickly enough for him. Eager to flee and go someplace where people are more interested in being colorful than coloring within the lines. He wears a boring suit and a fresh haircut to please his mother, but the purple tie and pocket square are my uncle's tribute to Prince.
Pay no attention to the curious photos on the wall, I say. These people will be unrecognizable soon, even to themselves.
You're weird, the girl says.
I shrug and take another swig of grappa before leading my tour back to the staircase.
I can hold that for you, Jamie says, reaching for the bottle.
Yes, a hockey god with manners. Good for you, Jamie Johnson, and welcome to Sault Ste. Marie. I gesture like a game show hostess. Now, don't be like tourists and pronounce it like salt. It's Sioux.
Noted, he says. You're full of fascinating facts. I catch his gently mocking tone.
Miigwech, hockey prince.
I look around. Hey, where did that girl go?
I think you lost her, Jamie says. C'est la vie. Such is life.
Qui n'y avance pas, recule, he says.
Who does not move forward, recedes. I stare at him. Jamie speaks French? Before I can ask him about it, I get distracted by his eyes. He's standing close enough for me to notice that his irises are lighter towards the pupil and have a darker brown perimeter that sort of bleeds into the tawny part. Grappa must sharpen my eyesight because I'm noticing every detail.
You're staring, Jamie says.
Girls are after you, I tattle. It sounds stupid as soon as I hear myself.
Thank you for the warning?
His wide smile tugs at the end of his scar. Hey, bub. We both turn to see Levi taking the stairs 2 at a time to join us. My brother puts an arm around me.
Got a favor to ask.
I brace myself. Previous favors have included me being his best friend Stormy's date to Shigala last year and providing Anishinaabe Moan nicknames for his friends and teammates. One guy kept pestering me for an Indian name better than everyone else's, so I told him that Gitche Mimi meant the biggest and most powerful bird. He went around for weeks, loudly crowing his new name before Anishinaab friend finally pulled him aside and explained it meant big, pileated woodpecker. In other words, big pecker.
Would you be Jamie's soup ambassador?
Me? But I'm not part of the club, I say in surprise. Them girls called dibs on the new soups.
Right. Levi gives Jamie a knowing look before adding,
that's why you'd be perfect.
Jamie's got a girlfriend, so you'd be keeping all the puck sluts away. I growl.
You know I hate that term.
Sorry, bub, Levi says quickly. What I meant is he could go running with you so you could tell him all about the town. He turns to Jamie. Did you know that Donis made the boys' varsity hockey team all 4 years at Sioux High? Plus, she was the class valedictorian.
I did notice she knows a lot of fun facts, Jamie says with a wink.
Hey, this feels like a setup, I say as the realization hits me. It's a help-up, bub. Any other girl as Jamie's ambassador would result in catfights.
Don't flatter yourself, I roll my eyes.
But if you think that's true, won't they be mad at me?
Did Levi just invent a word?
Help up? No one will mess with you, he says. You're a total badass, just like Aunt Teddy. And with those magic words, along with the pleased look on new guy's face and the warmth of the grappa, I agree to be Jamie's ambassador.